This is Harv Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast, and when I start my workday, it always begins with that morning shower. Normally, I use a liquid body wash, but recently I purchased a bar of Sterling Soap Company's handcrafted bath soap and decided to give their Deep Blue Sea handcrafted bath soap a try. Immediately, the aroma of Sterling's bath soap was obvious, and in using this soap, I felt refreshed, clean, energized, and Sterling's bath soap helped me step out of that shower with the momentum and eagerness to get my day rolling. If you want to get a refreshing wake-up call in the morning and get your busy day off to the right start, I highly recommend going to Sterling Soap Company's website and order one of their many varieties of bath soaps among other products they offer. Visit Sterling Soap Company at sterlingsoap.com. That's STIRLING soap.com.
Welcome to the Patriots from Boston to Foxborough. I'm your host, Joe Santos. Part 1, In the Beginning. The New England Patriots were born in 1960 and have been playing football in Foxborough since 1971. The time between 1960 to 1972 was a tumultuous period in this team's history, as the Pats played at four different venues for their home games, went through several coaching changes, and experienced some of the most embarrassing and not so memorable moments in league history. In this documentary slash podcast, we will start the journey from the team's humble beginnings in Boston and relive some really strange events that occurred during their time there. Fast forwarding to 1971, we will then travel down Interstate 95 and Route 1 to Foxborough, Massachusetts. But just because the team had finally found a place to call home, that didn't make them immune from experiencing additional crazy and absurd incidents, as we will soon discover. Billy Sullivan is widely credited as being the founder of the Patriots franchise. Sullivan was an American businessman who had unsuccessfully tried to land an NFL franchise in Boston. The NFL turned his offer down in part because five previous attempts at NFL franchises in Boston had either folded or moved. However, in late 1959, Sullivan got his big break when a new startup league, the American Football League, was formed to compete with the more established NFL. The AFL was created by several owners who, like Sullivan, had been denied entry into the NFL as expansion franchises. AFL co-founder Lamar Hunt called Sullivan and told him if he could get $250,000 to a Dallas bank within 5 days, he could have the final AFL franchise the new league was looking to round out for its inaugural 1960 season. Sullivan found nine other investors, including former Red Sox star Dom DiMaggio, to put up $25,000 each for a team, and thus the Patriots were born and became the eighth team in the AFL and the newest member of the Foolish Club, a self-deprecating term that came from Oakland Raiders owner Wayne Valley to describe the AFL's seemingly foolhardy venture to compete with the entrenched NFL. While Sullivan was the executive face of the franchise, he was not the majority owner. The team was actually run by a board of directors, some of whom had ownership in the team and others who were directors. For business in three rooms on Commonwealth Avenue in Boston, and their start was characterized by shoestring budgets, hand-me-down logistics, a desperate search for players, and a place to play their home games. Upton Bell, who years later would become the team's general manager, said when they got to Boston, the team's offices were next to a bowling alley right under Fenway Park. Bell's office was located in left field of Fenway and said when someone hit a home run into the monster, he could tell because the ball would rise above the ceiling in his office. His assistant general manager, who was hired from the league office in New York and more accustomed to fancier settings, had it much worse. His office was right next to the men's room. The Patriots selected Lou Saban from Western Illinois to be their first ever head coach, and he soon found out he had his work cut out for him, including the arduous task of finding enough competent players to fill the roster. Saban said, "We had bricklayers, we had carpenters, we had stoker men, and you name it, we had it. We had 125 helmets in one tryout camp, and we put a head on every helmet." The team's first training camp was held at UMass Amherst, which is about 90 minutes west from Boston. Fullback Larry Garin recalls how tumultuous things were that first year and the circus-like atmosphere that pervaded over camp. The turnover in that camp was like a nightmare. You would wake up in the morning and there was a different guy sleeping in the bed next to you than there had been when you went to bed the night before. Because there were so many players in camp, Saban wasn't able to notify them personally when he released them. Gino Capoletti, one of the Patriots' first All-Stars, recalled that players would run like hell after practice to the dorm to see if they had been cut. A lot of guys who were cut stuck around for a few days, eating 3 square meals and sleeping there. The team also held practice at some of the local Boston area schools, including one in Lexington, Mass. Saban remembered one practice as such. We were out there in our pads and doing our drills when the kids got out on recess and we had to stop. The kids would be getting in the huddles. We tried to shoo them away. A teacher came over and said the school belonged to the kids and not to us. And when it was recess time, it was the kids' time. So we had to get off the field every time there was a recess. The Patriots would eventually settle on playing their home games at Boston University's Nickerson Field. In addition to the challenge of fielding a team good enough to compete with the other AFL franchises, the Patriots also found themselves having to battle the New York Giants from the NFL. Unlike the Patriots, the Giants were well-established and perennially contended for championships with popular players such as Sam Huff and Frank Gifford. And as such, they had a loyal fan base in New England. This meant that for the Patriots to maximize attendance for their home games, it would make more sense for them not to go head-to-head against the Giants on Sunday. And since BU played their home games on Saturday, the Pats would have to play their home games on Fridays. With the roster finalized and the schedule in place, the Patriots were ready to play their first game of the regular season against the Denver Broncos. An interesting note in a sign of things to come, Broncos coach Frank Filchok took in the Patriots' walkthrough practice the night before and committed the entire game plan to memory. With this as the backdrop, an announced crowd of 21,600 people made their way to Boston University's Nickerson Field on September 9, 1960. The game began promisingly enough as the Patriots took an early 3-0 lead, courtesy of a Gino Capoletti field goal, and in the process scored the very first points in AFL history. With the Broncos head coach remembering what he saw the night before the Pats practice, it was downhill from there, and the Patriots would go on to lose 13-10. The team would go on to lose several more games that year and finish with a 5-9 record in their inaugural season. The 1961 season brought several changes, not the least of which was the introduction of the iconic At Patriot logo. This logo was designed by Boston Globe cartoonist Phil Bessel and replaced the team's initial logo, which was a simple tri-cornered hat. Pat Patriot would stick around in one form or another until 1993, when he would be replaced by the Flying Elvis, who's still around today. The other notable event that occurred in 1961 was the firing of first-year head coach Lou Saban, who was replaced by Mike Holoback, a Boston College alum, as was owner Billy Sullivan. Overall, the year was a success as the team finished 9-4-1 and had their first sellout on November 3, 1961 against the New York Titans. This game had a very memorable ending, as on the last play of the game, the Titans quarterback threw what would have been a game-tying touchdown pass, except that a Pats fan walked onto the field and knocked the ball away. The refs allowed the call to stand, and the Patriots knew they had a fan base. The Patriots had started to gain their first taste of success, and the team had another good year in 1962 as they went 9-4, and in 1963, they won their very first playoff game and captured the AFL East Championship. Unfortunately, the season came to an inglorious end when they lost the AFL Championship to the San Diego Chargers and were blown out 51-10. It would be 13 years before the Patriots would return back to the playoffs. And while the team would enjoy winning seasons in 1964 and 1968, the Patriots were about to embark on a very turbulent time in their history. For starters, they would become virtual nomads for the remainder of the decade and play their home games in three different stadiums from 1963 to 1970. The Pats would share Fenway Park with the Red Sox from 1964 to 1968, and it was during their tenure at Fenway that the team played a quote-unquote home game in Birmingham, Alabama. Due to a scheduling conflict with the Red Sox and in an effort to gauge interest in the team outside of Boston, owner Billy Sullivan had the Patriots play their September 1968 home game opener against the Jets at Legion Field in Birmingham, Alabama, which was the home field for the University of Alabama. For the record, the Jets won this game 47-31. And when the Sox decided they no longer needed a tenant, the Pats moved to Boston College's Alumni Stadium for the 1969 season. After 1 year at BC, the team moved to another college facility, Harvard Stadium, in 1970. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to join us for part two of the Patriots from Boston to Foxborough as we discuss the reign of one of its most bizarre coaches and the events that took place in their final season in Boston. You can find this and many other great podcasts on the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport.